Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Woolworths Group F20 Q1 Analyst Sales Announcement. All participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session. If you wish to ask a question, you will need to press the star key followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. I would now like to hand the conference over to Mr. Brad Banducci, Managing Director and Chief Executive Officer. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us this morning for the Woolworths Group first quarter sales results for F20. Joining me in the room this morning is Stephen Harrison, our CFO, Jane Peters, Managing Director of Woolworths Supermarkets, Amanda Bardwell, Managing Director of WooliesX, David Walker, Managing Director of BIG W, Stephen Donohue, Managing Director of Endeavour Drinks, and David Moore, our Chief Operating Officer. Also joining us on the phone is Matthew Davis, Managing Director of Woolworths New Zealand. Before I turn to sales, I wanted to address the other announcement we made to the ASX this morning. As you'll be aware, we recently implemented new enterprise agreements for Woolworths Supermarkets and Metro stores, BIG W, BWS, and Dan Murphy's. After we implemented the Woolworths Supermarket and Metro enterprise agreements, we received feedback from a handful of our salaried team members about their pay relative to our enterprise agreement waged team members. This sparked the beginning of a review to compare payments and conditions and terms and conditions for our Woolworths Supermarkets and Metro salaried store team members against the general retail industry award. Annual salaries for store team members are set to cover all their working hours and reasonable overtime. However, team members are entitled to be paid the higher of the contractual salary entitlements or what they would otherwise have earned for actual hours worked under the GWEA. The review has found the number of hours worked and when they were worked, more importantly, were not adequately factored into the individual salary settings for some of our salaried store team members. The review of the past years has found that approximately 5,700 salaried team members at store level have not been paid in full compliance with Woolworths Group's obligations under the GWEA. Our processes confirm that current and former salaried team members have been paid in accordance with their contractual entitlements, and there is no evidence that these shortfalls in payments have in any way been deliberate. This issue does not affect team members that are covered by one of our enterprise agreements, of which there are more than 100,000 in supermarkets and Metro. Despite this, we have always prided ourselves on putting our customers and our team first, and in this case, we feel we've let down many of our team members, and for that, as an executive team, we are deeply sorry. We're determined to make this right and rectify these payment shortfalls is our highest priority. Affected current and former salary team members will receive their full entitlements, including back pay, with interest and superannuation contributions as soon as possible. Initial interim back payments to affected supermarkets and Metro team members for the 2 years reviewed, 2018 and 2019, will be made before Christmas. We've engaged external consultants PwC to help us undertake an in-depth review of all of our award-covered salary team members across all of our business and all of our functions. While this has begun in Woolworths Supermarkets and Metro, it will be expanded, as I say, to Big W, BWS, Dan Murphy's and other businesses, and we hope to complete this review by the end of this financial year. The complexity in the review is to understand not what we pay our salary team members, but what they actually should be paid in light of the actual roster they work. And for that, we have to use our clock-in and clock-out data. This is an extremely complex process, which is why it will take as long as I've mentioned. As we go through it, we'll be making interim payments as we complete any year of analysis for any one of our businesses. We have already self-reported to the Fair Work Ombudsman and put in place an extensive plan to ensure our salary team members pay correct and compliant moving forward. Taking the existing 2 years of data for Woolworths Supermarkets and Metro and using the initial modelling across the group, the estimated one-off impact of remediation, assuming the issue could go back as far as the implementation of the modern award in 2010, is expected to be in the order of $200 to $300 million before tax. As I say, we will hope to complete the review by the end of the financial year, the full review, but we will certainly provide an update at the group's half-year earnings results in February. Turning now to sales, and I do expect to get a number of questions on that, of course, in the Q&A, but if I could just transition to some introductory comments down sales and then come back to the Q&A. Today we reported group sales from continuing operations for F1 of F20 of $15.9 billion, up 7.1% on the same quarter last year. It has been a pleasing start to the year with good sales momentum across the group. Customer metrics were generally robust and resilient in Australian food, given the above forecast sales and a number of the changes we've made to our store operating model in store. Group online sales were 37.4% for the quarter and was driven by a strong performance from both Australian and New Zealand food. New Zealand food sales for the quarter were $10.7 billion, an increase of 7.8% on the previous year. Comp sales increased by 6.6%, driven by online and a successful Lion King Rushi and Discovery Garden campaigns, as well as critically cycling weaker growth in the same period last year. We continue to expect sales momentum to moderate in Australian food for the remainder of the year. Customer metrics declined marginally on the previous year, with voice of the customer net promoter score down 1 point to 49, and store controllable voice of the customer for Australian food down 2 points versus last year at 8%. Queue wait times remain an area of opportunity and have been impacted both by the higher than expected sales growth and our new assisted checkout experience. We completed several new renewals in the quarter, including the opening of our newest metro site in Claremont. We expect to do 70 to 80 renewals in the current financial year, as with previous years. And the rollout of Fresh Made Easy, which I'm sure I'll get some questions on, continued across the quarter with new equipment, point of sale and planograms rolled out across the Woolworths supermarket fleet. To help support communities impacted by drought, we kicked off an appeal with a $2 limited edition sunflower seed and kit as part of the Woolworths Discovery Garden program. We also matched every dollar raised with the funds to be distributed to our appeal partners, Rural Aid, the Salvation Army, Food Bank and Lifeline, to enable financial support, on-farm support including stock feed, additional counsellors and assistance to address food insecurity in drought-impacted areas. WoolliesX continued to deliver a strong performance with online sales in Australian food up 43% on last year, driven by pickup growth. Lion King Orchard and the Discovery and the launch of Discovery Garden. There were record sales levels of visitors across our digital platforms, with online penetration reaching 4.5% for the quarter, as we continue to make improvements to the digital experience, including the launch of our new delivery subscription model, Delivery Unlimited. In Woolworths Rewards, we recently revamped our partnership with Qantas Frequent Flyer to improve the Woolworths Rewards to Qantas Frequent Flyer point conversion rate, as well as make it much easier for customers to access the program. New Zealand Food had a strong quarter, with strong sales, with total sales increasing 4.6% to $1.8 billion, driven by strong trading across fresh, health, and own brand, as well as improvements in store availability. Comp sales growth of 4.8% also benefited from the first 2 weeks of a successful Disney Words campaign and a new great price program, which replaces our historical red program, which was locked down and low price always, everyday low price. Online sales continued to be strong with growth of 38% in the quarter and an increasing penetration to 8.5% as CountdownX continues to focus on the user experience, including high levels of same-day convenience. Endeavour Drink sales increased 4.9% to $2.2 billion, with comp sales growth of 3.2%. Sales growth for both BWS and Dan Murphy's was driven by growth across all major categories, with the strongest growth in beer and spirits, and that really was in craft beer and in particular gin. Online sales growth was 21% compared to last year, and online penetration increased to 6.5%, supported by the rollout of new initiatives from EndeavourX, including the launch of new apps for both BWS and Dan, and the My Dan MyDan Murphy's, or now MyDan's loyalty program, was also relaunched during the quarter, with membership increasing to 3.7 million members. Big W sales increased by 2.6% to $926 million in the quarter, with comp sales increasing by 4.4%, making it the sixth consecutive quarter of positive comp sales for the business. Sales growth was driven by good momentum across most customer universes, particularly in our critically important apparel categories, with good momentum across seasonal lines. Store controllable voice of the customer continues to improve to 80% at the end of the quarter and up 1 point on last year. Online sales growth remains strong but moderated in Q1 at 21.2% after cycling 156% growth from the same period last year. Hotel sales for the quarter were $468 million, an increase of 5.5%. Comp sales increased by 3.6%, with strong growth in food and bars driven by refurbishments, promotional activity, and key sporting events. In summary, we are pleased with the group momentum for the start of F20 and now focused on our preparations for Christmas and the holiday season ahead to ensure customers have the best possible experience, both in-store and online, in all of our businesses. We have a very busy agenda in F20 across the group, including the embedding of our new customer operating model in Woolworths supermarkets and the transition to our new automated Emicon in Victoria. And I would like to thank our customers and team, particularly given our the prior announcement for the ongoing support. The Endeavour Group transaction is also progressing to plan, with the upcoming shareholder vote on the restructure scheme on the 16th of December, the next key milestone. I would like to now turn the call over to questions, and may I please ask that you limit your questions to two per person and rejoin the queue if you have any thereafter.
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question, please press star one on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your request, please press star then two. If you are using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset to ask your question. The first question comes from Michael Simotas from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. First question from me is relating to the collectibles program. So clearly, basket size has grown as a result of these programs. Just sort of looking at your sales mix as well as the trends through the quarter, do you think that there was a significant volume of sales pulled through to the quarter, i.e. you'll suffer that in the next quarter, or are you pretty comfortable that you've picked those up and things just moderate to a more normal level rather than giving it back?
Good morning. Thanks, Michael. Let me give a high-level answer and then I'll turn over to Claire to provide a bit more colour and detail. Look, there's no question that collectibles with a minimum of $30 to get the seed or the ushi does lead to a slightly higher basket size. So you've clearly seen a slightly higher basket size driven by that, but also growth in online, of course, also contributes to the growth in basket size because we get a much larger basket size in online. Actually, what's interesting is the strong growth in our basket size, despite the fact that we're cycling the single-use plastic bag launch of last year, we're selling a lot less plastic bags. So it was very good item growth per basket, but we don't really believe had its impact. It'll pull forward a lot of sales out of Q2, and I'll turn over to Claire to provide a little bit of colour to that.
Thanks, Brian. Hello, Michael. I would echo what Brian has said, and when we look particularly at our fresh food categories in quarter one and also for the first couple of weeks, which clearly would be less impacted by pantry filling, we're not seeing that pantry fill up across any of our areas. Fresh food particularly gives us comfort that hasn't happened.
Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you. And then the second question from me is just relating to the comment that sales were higher than expected and as a result, voice of the customer slipped a little bit. So it sounds like you would have put a little bit more labour into the stores if you could have. Is that a reasonable way to think about it? And just sort of bearing that in mind, how do you think the stores were sort of running from a, you know, shrinkage perspective, et cetera, given you were running a little bit short on service?
Yeah, look, I mean, thank you, Michael. It would be fair to say that our sales run ran above what we forecast, and we do schedule our hours to forecast. So there was that issue, but there's never any one issue why we get a slight softening in our voice of the customer scores, which I find useful in our business because it provides an area of focus to address going into the second quarter. As you would be aware, we've moved in our self-checkouts to assisted checkout, so that process and the embedding of that process, plus the higher than forecast sales, plus changes to our operating model, meant that there was a lot going on in stores at the same time. The number one score that we need to work on clearly is checkout, and that is a big area of focus going into quarter two. So, there's a combination of factors there. No one factor by itself would have driven this opportunity, but it's a combination of them. But it gives the team great focus in Q2, and we're really starting to see improvements in that regard.
Okay.
Thank you. The next question comes from Grant Saligari from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just a first question, just to clarify some of the numbers around the wages, Brad, if we could. Would it be fair to assume that there would be a step up in wages costs as you move the salaried team members to whatever the required payments are consistent with the award? And to do that, would we take that $300 million estimate and divide it by 10? And would that be, you know, an indicative number to be working to in terms of the wages expense impact ongoing from this?
Thank you. And listen to Sales announcement, sorry, I realise I should have addressed Michael's question despite a Sales announcement on stock loss. I might come back to that at the end of this. So it is a Sales announcement. We will come back at the half year and, you know, quite clearly quantify where we are tracking on various aspects of our P&L. In the context of our business, though, it will lead to clearly increases in salaries, and we've already taken action on that. But it's not material in the context of our overall numbers, which is why we're not calling it out specifically at this point. But expect more, clearly, and more detail on it, as with all of our initiatives at the hotline, including stock loss. I would say on stock loss, while I wanted to call out the number, we have had a good quarter of stock loss and are tracking in line with our plan. That is one of the positives, clearly, on sales that does help you in that regard.
Okay. Second question then, maybe move on, just on the sales result. I mean, you're getting some tremendous progress on your digital initiatives. I mean, your online sales in Ausfood contributed 1.5% of your comps. In Countdown, it was sort of more like 2.5% of your comps. But I noticed that in terms of penetration, you are starting to bump up closer to that 10% threshold we've discussed in the past as to the limit to which you would, or where you would be limited in providing online sales services through your supermarket. So just wondering how quickly you can bring forward the next stage of technology there, and you've been talking obviously about or some automation at the back of some of the larger stores.
So, I mean, it's a very interesting question that we could talk for a very long period about. As the business grows, though, we're learning more and more how to manage the capacity in store. And actually, our New Zealand business, which has a much higher penetration, is providing a lot of learnings back to the group, given if you start looking at the numbers they're bumping up there, and some of the numbers in specific stores are twice that. We're learning how to manage this in-store without interrupting or disrupting the customer as we go. So there is a lot more capacity available to us in our stores to service e-commerce. There's no question about that. But in parallel, as per a previous announcement, we are looking at establishing micro fulfillment centres, and those are progressing to plan. They won't, however, make any material difference to our capacity in this financial year. It really is an F21 addition to our business in terms of capacity. But it's amazing, now that the business has hit scale, how much we're learning and how much refinements and process improvements we are managing to put into it, and how much additional capacity that opens.
Thank you. The next question comes from Brian Raymond from Citi. Please go ahead.
Thanks, guys. My first one just on overall industry growth, and I think some of the earlier questions alluded to it, but if you combine yourselves and Coles, industry growth accelerated quite materially from 4Q19 to 1Q20, or at least the combined growth for the two of you guys. Could you guys just make some comments around the outlook for the industry in terms of growth? We've obviously seen some better inflation trends, but do you think the majors are taking share from the independents, or do you think we're seeing just a healthier level of growth across the industry? Maybe I'll leave it there, and just also if you can weave in the 5.4% exit run rate that you guys managed to achieve after your trading update in the final 6 weeks, that sort of still indicates a pretty healthy level of growth. Certainly into 2Q20.
Yeah, thank you, Brian. Look, I think we shouldn't kid ourselves on our numbers. Really pleased by the quarter, but you always need to look at the 2-year comp rate to sort of get some balance to where we're at. And on a 2-year basis, if you look at our just top line sales, we did 7.1 for the group, but on a 2-year basis, that's about 4.5. In the context of food, really our 2-year numbers ran for the first half at 4.9, so 4.85. So it's still an outstanding result, but we did benefit in Q1 across the group of relatively weaker trading the year before, and I think we certainly keep that in mind inside our business, and it's a very important contextual step. That aside, when we come back to the growth, we did think that the growth for the sectors we participate in was relatively pleasing in Q1 across all of the sectors we compete in. I'll come and give you a bit of colour. In food, there are very different ways you can measure it. We thought the overall sector grew between 3.5% and 4% for the quarter, which was, I think, a very pleasing number, certainly slightly ahead of the long-term trend. In regard specifically to that in Q2, you may remember, Brian, last year was a very challenging quarter in food, but actually in some of our other sectors as well in Q2 with very inclement weather in particular. At this time of the year, as we went into the spring carnival, we are hoping, clearly, as we cycle that at a sector level, that hopefully we'll continue to see a positive growth rate, but we're not in the business, of course, of forecasting that, and I should reference the fact that it was a slightly weaker quarter than last year. In terms of colour to those numbers, we are seeing, as you will see from our trend line, a slow move towards neutral inflation deflation, and you've seen that happen and progress in that regard. We did actually see fruit and veg go deflationary in Q1, so that sort of pulled us back, but we're starting to see, of course, in the long life categories, continued pressure and slow movements to a very neutral setting. And so I think that's quite important to call up. We'll see how it plays through into the second quarter. We are slightly inflationary in New Zealand, as we see the same pressure apply there in food. If we go to drinks, actually, we are seeing trading up across the sector, but the number one watch out we would call out will be still challenges really in wine, which is the lowest growth component of the overall industry right now. We haven't had a bad quarter, but it's still a bit of a challenge getting that back into growth. But the real high growth coming in the more craft categories, as I've alluded to, of beer and spirits. If we look inside our discount department store business inside BW, really, it's again very hard to look at sector outlook. The portion of our business that has had the slowest growth has been really in our leisure sector, which is about electronics and gaming consoles and DVDs and things like that, but actually quite pleasing growth in particular in the apparel sector, and we've benefited from that. So a very long answer to a simple question. We saw quite pleasing market characteristics in the first quarter. We are hopeful that will continue in the second quarter, but we're still very early into the quarter, and that really will be determined post Halloween as we get into the run into Spring Carnival and then, of course, into Christmas.
Thank you. And then just my second one, just on Big W, actually, and the slowdown in sales momentum that you saw there, but I also noticed your average sale price implied out of your volume growth and your like-for-likes actually flipped around to be a positive contributor. So I'm just wondering how your promotional campaigns went through the first quarter 20 and how that compares to the back half of 19 when you saw very strong sales, but I think you mentioned at the time quite a lot of...
We didn't have a sales slowdown in Q1. We had a very deliberate move in mix in Q1 and I'll let Dave talk to it. So, you know, it's a very broad, all of our businesses have a whole range of categories in them, but that's particularly true in Big W. And as we refocused our business and, you know, the whole translation of revenue into EBIT, we've adjusted where we focus and what our focus is, and we had a very pleasing performance in the categories we were most focused on. But Dave, I don't know if you wanted to provide any more colour to that.
Sure. You know, I think the thing that we're pleased about in the first quarter is just how we're adjusting our business a little bit. So as Brad said, in audiovisual, our sales growth has moderated, and typically in categories like TVs, which are pretty low margin. Obviously, electronic gaming and consoles, again, low margin. And again, we shifted our promotional mix away from those. But pleasingly, given some of the challenges we've had historically, what we're seeing is full price apparel sales are really strong for the quarter. So we're kind of pleased with the momentum that we've got in that.
Thanks, Dan.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Once again, to register a question, please press star one on your phone. The next question comes from Richard Barwick from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Good morning, all. Brad, I just wanted to ask a little bit more on around your new store customer operating model. And you've referenced it a couple of times, and it sounds like the actually implementing it has caused perhaps some sort of negative impact in terms of voice of the customer. What exactly are the steps that you're taking? So what is this the new operating model? And I guess from a customer perspective, what are they seeing that is impacting them in the near term?
Thanks, Richard. Well, look, I'll talk to it in detail in high level, and then I'll turn to Claire to provide a bit more colour. Firstly, I wouldn't point at that as the reason for our customer scores declining. It was a whole combination of factors, and particularly including the very strong sales. And as Claire has rightly pointed out to me and on the side, those sales were combined with the need for our checkout team members to be providing or giving us either issues or seeds, which makes it an even more complex process. So I think no one factor led to a slight softening of the scores you're looking at. The reason we call that the customer operating model is because it is a very material change for us. We believe that it is the right thing and sets our business up for the future and is really focused on how customers are shopping us and has a number of customer benefits. But any big change is very hard to do. It's just not straightforward in a business of our size and scale. I think the key for us is that we implemented the new operating model in Q1 with the very desire to get it done, then so we could settle the team down, get all the right training in place to ensure we had a good Christmas. But there are some very material customer benefits to us that I'll turn to Claire to talk about.
Yeah, thank you, and morning, Richard. First of all, on the customer benefits, as you said at the start, this is all very much how we can get ourselves ready for the next generation of what our customers are wanting. So the specifics around ensuring we had a salaried manager who's in charge of our convenience business was critical. It wasn't a role that was within our structure. And as we continue to see customers shop between protein, meat and seafood, the ability to manage that through fresh service rather than the traditional meat counter, deli counter. We've also already seen, not only in the POC pilot, but now the national, which has been live for 4 weeks, how customers have been able to move through those counters more with the salaried management team being upskilled on all those areas. From a team member point of view, as Brad rightly said, 10,000 team members did have the opportunity to apply for these roles. And the support that they've had in that is a significant amount of training within their new areas. And we also brought all of our new fresh key roles, which were new structure, to Sydney to give them a two-day event on not only their new role and their content training of that, but also get them to understand some more of the product trends that they would want to test and trial, take that back to the store, take that back to their new teams. Obviously, with all of that, what was absolutely critical was we gave every opportunity of our team the ability to have a role in the store, which has meant we probably moved around 600 team members into new roles in the store, and that's now what we're heavily focused on. Quite a few of those teams did go to our system service managers, and that's where the emphasis now is giving them training to be ready for Christmas.
Thanks, therefore. For those of you who are picking orders of testing us in store, the two roles I can't talk to, which are critical roles and make many changes, would be the Fresh Convenience Manager, which looks after chilled bakery and our new Fresh Made Easy categories, and Fresh Service Manager, which is the combination of our counters that we alluded to on protein. So you'll see those as very critical roles and investments for the future.
So thank you. Thanks for that, Claire and Brad. So I guess the point is that when you actually reference that new operating model, it is very much focused on the fresh and fresh convenience. That's part of the store, nowhere else in the store?
Well, look, there are a number of other changes that need to get adjusted in doing that, Richard, but I think, at the macro level, it's the key highlight. One of the other benefits in this is that the assistant store manager really takes more direct accountability for the on-shelf availability and the long life portion of the store, which gives the store manager themselves more time to focus on both fresh and experience at the checkout. So we really want to also free up the store manager to spend a lot more time on the critical areas as well. So that would be the, I guess if you're going to call out one other benefit, I think that would be the other one.
Okay, thank you. And just the second question sort of follows on with where Brian was going with the comment that sales growth to moderate over the remainder of the financial year. How much of that is about just recognising, the sort of the boost that you got in this first quarter, and therefore, things you're obviously not going to track along at the same run rate, or is it a comment that you genuinely believe, as you progress through second, third, and fourth quarters, that you'd expect growth to slow? Just want to clarify.
No, it is based on the first, and it's really looking at our two-year comp numbers. We've got to be a wonderful quarter for a sales side, and then we had a few other challenges, but probably the kinds of challenges in many ways you would rather have than the alternative. But we've just got to be very realistic as we look at the 2 year numbers and as we've become some very weak numbers in the first quarter.
Yeah, okay, understood. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Ben Gilbert from UBS. Please go ahead.
Morning, Brad and team. Interesting first question, maybe just from a strategic standpoint. You've obviously had a very strong quarter in Aussie Foods, and presumably it was probably a little bit, the response to issues a little bit better than you would have thought. So you probably got a little bit more money in the tank, I would have thought, around sort of GP dollars at least. I'm just interested in how you think about that strategically looking forward over the next quarter, next 6 months, 12 months plus. Do you sort of sit there and take the view, look, we're in a strong position, we've got good momentum, let's put some more money into this business to try and really retain the customers? I'm just interested in how you think about it strategic in terms of looking to capitalise on the momentum that you've got and potentially hold on to it for a bit longer.
Well, thanks, Ben. Obviously it's a sales call, not an earnings call. We'll come back at the half.
Yeah, not asking for profit. I'm just interested in how you think about retaining.
Yeah, look, I think we set ourselves some really stretched targets in terms of the way we wanted to transform our business during the year. And really our key focus, as always in the last couple of years, is to execute the plan. Where we come arise when we add extra things into the plan, the key thing is to execute the plan, and the key thing there is to get our customer scores to where we want them to be, and that's what we're working very hard on, particularly in Q2, and just making sure that whether it's in digital, or whether it's at the checkout, or whether it's in our new Fresh Made Easy part of the store, that we give a great experience to our customers. And then very importantly, as we sort of talked about at the beginning, just coming back to our team and giving them the support they need, whether it's the training and development given our new operating model, or just addressing this uncertainty in people's minds of whether they are eligible for a back pay. So, only Q1, we know that the key quarter is Q2, and it's just really executing the existing plan, which has enough ambition in it, I think.
And just on then, just maybe sort of post-Ushi's, can you give us any colour around customer retention? Because I think if we look back to prior year with Coles Little Shop, there's probably a lot of people driving past your stores to go to Coles, and then as soon as it ended, it seems like you got quite a big bounce back. Interested in just how you're seeing customer retention, particularly some of the bigger shops like Family.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'll certainly care for a bit of colour, but obviously, it really does particularly impact the new and young family segments, so disproportionately, particularly the issues and to some extent the Discovery Zone. And so we did clearly in the quarter see more of them shopping with us than we had historically, so that was very pleasing. But at this stage, it's very hard to call out how the swing back will take place in Q2. And that's because we've had quite a peculiar quarter where, for actually the reasons of when spring falls, we had the Lighting Wishes program really almost overlap with the Discovery Garden program. So it's very hard at this stage for us to be very precise on what we may see happen with the customers, given the fact that these programs really ran almost consecutively with each other, if you know what I mean. But, you know, the theory is, as you well know, is that once the program is over, the customer switches back. It's just hard to call that it right now. It's one of the reasons we call it up the critical importance of customer experience. If we want to retain them here, then we have to provide a great experience in store. I'm not sure if anything you'd like to add to that.
I just echo what you said. We saw the retention continue through one class of campaign to another. But actually, with Christmas being less than 8 weeks away, literally to the day, actually our focus is on execution of the plan and what we need to do for our customers and team.
And it doesn't really make sense. Does it make sense to have another collectible type campaign in Christmas when people are less focused around collectibles and more focused around just getting in and buying the whole?
There's not something we could talk to because obviously, you know, but I mean, you know, we are quite sensitive that we've just run two back to back and we need to also think about how we pulse different programs. We will always have some form of community engagement program. I think if our head of marketing was here, he would say Christmas is a community engagement program in and of itself. So, you know, can't talk to the specifics, but we are quite sensitive to making sure we get the right balance. Because, you know, year runs by very quickly and then you're in the next year. So it's always really too quite cautious and thoughtful about that.
Nice. Thanks very much.
Thank you. The next question comes from Johannes Fall from Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hi, Brad. I was wondering if you could give us a bit more color around the split or the mix of like-for-like sales of Metro stores and the Australian supermarket.
Thank you. Honestly, we don't split it out. It's something I'll take on notice for the future. We still have a number of metros transitioning across, supers transitioning to metros, so the numbers are a bit messy. In addition, with the major work that happened in downtown Sydney, given the number of stores we had there was quite a lot of disruption. So the numbers are noisy. It's very hard to be precise, but I would say that our metro stores grew in line, if not ahead on a like-for-like basis, to our supermarkets.
Okay, great. And then I was also wondering if you've seen any product mix contributing to your sales growth in terms of customers switching to more premium products?
That's a really, really good question. I'll give a highlight and then I'll ask Kel. I will say, very importantly, issue to call out is that as the new price increase on tobacco went through, we have started to see a material slowdown on tobacco sales. And that has become a reducing mix of our business in Q1, and that's continued into Q2. So that is worth calling out. It is also worth calling out that infant formula as a component of our business is also decreasing, at least relative to the allocations we had last year. If you look inside our business, and one of the reasons we've put in a fresh convenience manager has been the continued growth in chilled products in our business as people sort of take a very broad definition on fresh. So that's very important for us. And we that's why we wanted to invest in team in Chile. So I think those are very important. And then the other two that which are very important strategically that I'll let Claire talk to have been our deliberate continued focus on health and international foods.
Yes, thank you, Brad. So on those two particular categories, particularly in HBV, we saw some very pleasing uplift fair to say that that category was also supported by our supplier partners in the Pet Store campaign, which obviously drove baskets in that area as well. But from a strategic point of view, our localisation in health and international food and winning on key events has again continued through the quarter, which we are very pleased to see.
Thanks, Beth. Thanks, Charles.
Thank you. The next question comes from Phil Kimber from Evans and Partners. Please go ahead.
Oh, good day, Brad. Just a question, if you could just run through, you know, broadly whether you saw any material geographic sales trends in either food, liquor, or Big W worth calling out, you know, certain states doing better than others?
Thank you, Paul. Actually, you know, we have made comments in the past on quite a pronounced sort of two-speed economy between different states, etc., but there's not as many pronounced trends right now as there were then. We've seen actually quite a consistent growth pattern across the country. You know, there are minor nuances at the moment, but I wouldn't overplay them at this stage. Certainly, our slightly more regional stores have slightly outperformed our metro stores, but it really is more at the margin. It's been a relatively consistent growth rate over the quarter from our perspective across all of our businesses. Clearly, when you get to our liquor business, we start indexing more beer as we get into the more sunny climates and further up in Queensland, but nothing I would call out. I'm just looking at the team to see whether there's anything particular to be called out. Actually, quite a consistent quarter we felt for overall spend, overall consumer sentiment across both sides of the Tasman for us.
Okay, and then just a follow-up, you mentioned there that you've seen a slowdown in tobacco post the last excise raise. Is that something that you've seen in the past, like immediately after the excise comes through, you see a slowdown and then it bounce back, or is it a little bit different this time?
Yeah, look, it's not my over area of expertise, as you might imagine, but if I tell you what our head of buying in that area would say, clearly it's often a short-term adjustment, but this is the first time we've seen it continue on, and it looks like more of a structural change. We'll wait and see in upcoming weeks whether that is in fact true, but it does seem to be more structural than it has in the past, where the material excise has led to a short-term reduction in sales, and maybe there's been a bit of pantry stocking in the pre-excise period as well. This has gone on longer and has been deeper than we've seen in the past, as we specifically called it out.
Okay. Thanks, Brad.
Thank you. At this time, we're showing no further questions. I'll hand back the conference to Mr. Banducci.
Thank you, as always, everyone, for joining us on our sales call. I think the key headline message is we had pleasing momentum in sales in Q1. It really was a follow-on in many ways from the last week, 6 weeks of Q4. But it's all about Christmas. We have the start and the run to Christmas with Halloween tomorrow, and then the gallop's on. So, as always, I'd encourage you to shop our business. The truth is in the store, and thank you for your time on the call today.